Hello, welcome to the Your Politics podcast, RTE's weekly politics podcast from our team at Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler. With me today, my colleagues Joe McGrailig, Juliet Gash and Micheál Lehane. They were lighting the Christmas lights in Leinster House this week, Joe, the inside rather than outside because of Storm Bran, but there was no sign of Christmas cheer in the Dáil Chamber at Leaders' Questions today, was there?
Yeah, no, it's hot and heavy at the moment. It's coming to the end of term, I suppose, and people are maybe, you know, thinking they want to leave, make their mark before they leave. But yeah, there was some fairly heated exchanges. Patrick O'Donovan was in the chair for the government, and he was facing Sinn Féin, the Labour Party, and Independents. There was a degree of name calling. That's what came into it today. Mm-hmm. Sinn Féin were raising the issue of the blister packs again, which our colleague Micheál Lehane said has the potential to become a real political row, as I understand it. And
these are the new charges that have been brought in for the use of the blister packs. And
yeah, it's one that's crept up on everybody. Yeah.
And this is about managing the tablets in a regular way. The people have to take so many very often throughout the day. They come pre-prepared in these blister packs. Now you've got to pay for that privilege.
Yeah, the costs are always covered by the pharmacy, well, covered by the government through the pharmacies. But now from January, I think you'll have to pay for it yourself. So it could be 20, 30, it could be 50, 60 euro. So it's one that's completely crept up on people. Nobody was aware of this. And Matt Carty was saying today that since they raised it yesterday, pharmacies have been inundated with calls, that they're inundated with calls and all the rest of it. But in the course of the exchanges there today, he referred to the government as a Scrooge-like government and a Scrooge-like minister, that they wouldn't address this particular matter. Now, I don't know how much money's involved, but it's the type of thing that, you know, left unchecked can really develop legs and can really become a very difficult issue for a government. TDs going home for Christmas, facing into the, visiting and seeing their constituents, they could hear a lot about that.
But Joe, how do we go from, you know, a serious discussion about the question of blister packs? This all feeds into the cost of living. Again, new figures out today and not looking great on that front. So how do we get from that into a row about the word Muppet? The bit I'm failing to understand.
Muppet was the word that Deputy Mark Ward shouted across at Conor Sheehan from the Labour Party, again in Leaders' Questions today. So basically what happened, Matt Carty and Patrick O'Donovan were arguing the toss over and back and contradicting each other and shouting over each other. The Cian Corley got involved there. Conor Sheehan then stood up to make his contribution, and the first thing he said, he thanked the Cian Corley for what he did, and he said, this is the National Parliament, not a cattle mark in Kilmallock, which obviously evinced some strong reaction from both the Sinn Féin people and from some on the government side. And in the course of a number of calls, one word came through clear, Muppet. And that then led to Jed Nash demanding that be retracted. That was
I think John McGuinness hadn't heard it. So that's the problem.
He hadn't heard it, the last Cian Corley. There's a suspicion that there might have been a word before Muppet as well. But that cannot be heard on the mic. Yes.
Type of Muppet.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll have to look at
the Muppet. Is Muppet on parliamentary language?
I think it could be the word before it.
Exactly. The word before it. Muppet is not on the list of no-nos. Things like gutter snipe. Wonderful words like that are on the list.
And it's ironic, actually.
Yeah, scoundrel.
Kind of well-known Fianna Fáil TDs who shall remain nameless, who always referred to the Thursday leaders as the Muppet Show, given that some of the 18 wouldn't be present.
But interesting as well, this cost of living pressure is coming up questions after questions after questions. No matter who's taking the questions on the government side, it's the issue all the opposition parties keep hammering.
Yeah, and this is an interesting one, because what you had today from Minister Patrick O'Donovan is kind of strong talk about the things the government have done, but equally a concession that this could be problematic. He said there are times where people need assistance when they're taking daily medications. The Taoiseach yesterday said the government would interrogate this particular policy again. So unlike the energy credits, unlike other stuff, referring back to what was in the budget for lower income families isn't sufficient on this one. And I think it really is strange that anyone, and of course there aren't too many left from that period around 07, 08, when the first real bite of the incoming recession came, and it was that tightening of the medical card for elderly people. people that led to some of the most vociferous protests on the street. That really shook Fianna Fáil people and led to one Fianna Fáil backbencher ultimately breaking ranks. So this has potential. I think there's awareness of that. But for the moment, there seems to be an acceptance that it has to be dealt with by the HSE and the Irish Pharmacy Union. But that won't cut it when TDs go back to the constituency this weekend. Mm-hmm.
All right. And of course, another issue that came up this week was the question of the HSE not having gone ahead with the more expensive flu vaccine, given that we're in the middle of such a big flu epidemic at the moment. But parking the flu, let's talk about Minister Patrick O'Donovan, Juliet. And he was making headlines this week outside of leaders' questions in his own department. And this pilot scheme on age verification for the digital wallet. And of course, this is about the whole issue of the safety of children online. Australia this week having brought in a social media ban for under 16s.
That's right. They brought in a ban for under 16s of 10 of the biggest names in social media companies. And I think it was from midnight on Wednesday, their time, it came in, meaning that these companies would face massive fines for allowing children onto their platforms. Now, of course, children under 13, technically in Ireland, aren't allowed on many of those platforms. But it has been proposed that a digital age verification tool is amalgamated in or built into this digital wallet that's in development. So Minister Patrick O'Donovan said that the pilot scheme would begin in the first quarter of next year. So in the first 3 months, they're going to recruit about 2,000 people in that pilot scheme, under 18s with the consent of their parents and over 18s, to look at how this would work. There are similar wallets in other countries as well. Patrick O'Donovan was at pains to say he was frustrated with the pace of change in Europe, and really this was a European Commission competency, and that it had the responsibility, but he felt they weren't working quickly enough. Now, having spoken to some people in that sphere, they were saying that, you know, initially it was expected that Commissioner Naman would look at the whole algorithms issue, which a lot of the campaigners say is more what the problem is, because people can get around age verification. But what's really dangerous and harmful to children is these algorithms. That was kicked back to Europe by Commissioner Naman. And so that is now not being looked at in that way. However, just to make the point that other countries in Europe are already tackling this without Europe being involved, because they want to get ahead of it.
So the minister is launching a pilot scheme. He's saying it's going to be a priority to try and reach EU consensus on this during Ireland holding the EU presidency.
Not a great approach, though, calling the EU and the way it works is clunky and already pitching a battle from the often abrasive minister.
And he's also going to be coming up with his own legislation, having seen the pilot scheme. So, I mean, a lot going on, but not necessarily a lot changing in the very near future.
No, and interestingly, the minister himself won't be drawn on an age, but we understand that it is the government's preference to say 16 is the age of digital consent. But what's that for? Is that for a social media site, or is that for pornography? And experts in child online safety would say really what you need is, you know, an app based age limit, not a blanket, you know. So they suggest Snapchat is more harmful than Facebook, for example.
And Jo, as the parent of teenagers, you know as well as I do, they can get around these things. They are so far ahead of the curve of anybody older than them. You know, we can't even imagine half the stuff that they've learned. So the fears of many people are that, you know, the risk with these kind of bans is you'll be driving them underground, which will make the whole issue even more unregulated and potentially less safe.
Yeah, there's always that. I think, though, that it's very widely acknowledged by parents and by everybody else that this is a problem, and it has been the Wild West. Was it Patrick O'Donovan who commented yesterday, you wouldn't allow your child to go in and sit up the bar and order gin and tonic under the age of 16, so why would you allow them to access all of these, you know, some of the worst material, potentially, not that most kids aren't accessing that, but they're, you know, they can. So why would you allow them to do that unregulated, you know? And really it comes back to the tech companies. They didn't exist 20 years ago. This wasn't a problem 20 years ago. And now it's a problem. So you would think that it's on the tech companies that this should be focusing, rather than kind of coming at it like a fire brigade at the end of the process.
Well, of course, we've got the likes of Elon Musk talking about censorship and freedom of speech and all of that.
So,
with all of that. Let's move on to one of the big themes of the week, and that's been defence. And, of course, On Thursday, we've Minister Helen McEntee, Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence, announcing that Ireland will be moving ahead. Is it 19 million on anti-drone equipment in the next year? This is all part of developing our radar and air surveillance and defences between now and 2028. And of course, it follows the fact that we now know about this suspicious drone raid that took place during President Zelensky's visit. The Russians are denying that it was them. Micheál Martin and the European Union not particularly buying all of that. The more you look at it, though, Micheál, the fact that this could happen so blatantly while the President of Ukraine is in Ireland, when we are going to be hosting the presidency of the European Union next year.
At the same time, government initially tried to be quite nonchalant about it, saying that this had happened in places like Denmark. So what can you do, even if you do have a far superior defence strategy? At the same time, today you can hear that determination, it seems, to spend money quickly. But there's only so swiftly you can do something. I mean, this anti-drone technology was meant to be in the third quarter of this year. It's now going to take until at least summer next year before it is in place. And it does seem like experts from other countries had to be brought in and put around government buildings.
Poland and France, isn't that right?
To have that capacity during the Zelensky visit. And then as well, even when it comes to things like radar, which has been spoken about for so long now, that it will be 2028 before, even with this big injection of cash, before you see that system fully up and running. So in the meantime, there will be a reliance inevitably on other countries. Equally with things like sonar and that, the money's going to be spent now, but it'll take some time to get it up and running. And the more far more simple thing then, it seems, will happen soon enough, but it's been a long time coming. That is that big aircraft that's required to get personnel and citizens out of countries at short notice that can travel long distances. That's due to arrive soon as part of this 1.7 billion expenditure. But along with all that, you do inevitably have people pointing out that there has been neglect, whether it comes to retention or whether it even comes to money being returned from the Department of Defence over several years, 23 and 24, 70 million going back unspent each year. So while you have a big gesture today, I think there will be a degree of scepticism until there is delivery.
One observation, just looking at the pictures from the event in the Curragh today, where the minister was announcing that 1.7 billion euro investment, the army had wheeled out some of their equipment there for the backdrop to all of that, you know. And if I don't know if you noticed, Micheál or Juliet, the registration numbers on the vehicles there. There was an armoured personnel carrier, and the registration number was it was an 04D, so that's 21 years old. There was a Land Rover Jeep there. And they're in spick and span and military style condition. And that was all 3D. So it's,
you know, good thing from the army's point of view, though, is if you want to be flippant about it, is they're very close to vintage. So there could be a certain monetary gain on that.
30 years, I think, officially to become a vintage vehicle in Ireland. The other thing, though, I was going to say to you, Anya, is it's going to be very interesting to see how this announced expenditure will be perceived internationally over the next couple of days. Because even today, if you just Google Ireland defence, weak link, those three terms, there are dozens and dozens of articles written about Ireland's posture, Ireland's failure to invest in this, Ireland being the weak link to the European Union, the weak link for defence of the internet lines, of the pipelines, of all of that stuff, and that how we've kind of allowed ourselves to live off the proximity of our more powerful neighbours and been able to sort of revel in our neutrality without ever investing in things.
And there's another issue that we're getting increasing clarity on. Because we're not a member of NATO, we don't have a CIA, we don't have an MI5, but that also means that there's no structure for other countries to share classified information with us. And we also have no parliamentary oversight. And again, in the UK, in America, you would have committees that have special protocols and, you know, private sessions and all of the rest. So that's another huge big gap in our security defencelessness.
Well, and in fact, we do have a parliamentary committee that looks at security and national defence, and they are in the middle of a row now. It's headed up by Rose Conway Walsh of Sinn Féin, and she was seeking this week to have a session with the Garda Commissioner, the Chief of the Defence Forces, and with the Taoiseach, a session in private to discuss what had happened over the Zelensky visit and the drones. The Garda Commissioner said he wouldn't be available, and it's not the first time on Garda Síochána have refused to come into the the committee because they're not confident about, you know, that system, or that it, that the confidentiality will be there, or that the, you know, the very sensitive material that they would have to discuss would be given the, you know, that proper treatment and the careful treatment that's needed. Now, of course, the committee members say absolutely no danger of that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. What they were talking about was a session in private, not for public, not for the media to be present. But that's an ongoing row, actually, at the moment. And so, therefore, those discussions are not taking place, certainly within this building anyway.
And whatever discussions, Juliet, we are finally starting to have about defence in Ireland, we're playing catch-up on basic defences. One of the big political arguments we know coming down the track on defence is moving from the triple to the double lock. Meanwhile, in France and Germany and Poland, they're talking about introducing forms of the draft, because they're talking about the possibility of war in Europe in the short, near to medium term.
Mm, exactly. And I mean, I suppose, again, the backdrop being the threat of Russia, the war in Ukraine, and interestingly, around the same time of the drone sightings during Zelensky's visit, there were drones overflying a French nuclear submarine base. And that was making serious headline news on the French news. I mean, that's an absolute no-no. It is a no-fly zone, and it is, yeah, you know, clearly not what they should be doing. But as you say, this voluntary draft is being talked about in France too, and you know.
They didn't. The French didn't succeed in shooting them down either, though. That was.
I think some of them were. I think some of them were intercepted.
They attempted to try and jam them, but yeah. I don't think any of them actually were taken down, yeah, which is interesting because they have all that technology. We don't have the technology. Yeah.
And of course, in Ireland, we had that attack on the HSE, that cyber attack on the HSE, which has since been put down to the activities of Russian bad actors. The IAEA, just the latest to warn about the hybrid threat. So the threat isn't all going to be, you know, something in the air. For instance, look at just what happened on the news. I'm not saying anyone was responsible for that. How easy it is to shut down a whole city, how easy it would be to shut down the whole country if we lost our gas supplies, if something happened to Dublin Port.
One of the facts from the IAEA report was that we've only enough food in the country to last 3 days. You know, and when, you know, we talk so much about our agriculture and our ability to live off the land, 3 days. You know, we're a bit snookered then as an island.
We could survive on butter and milk and beef for a bit longer than 3 days anyway. You know, we have loads of that, but it wouldn't be
a
very exciting diet.
What about the oat milk, Joe? If there was no oat milk in my house...
Didn't Priti Patel suggest during the Brexit negotiations they could airdrop food into us? I mean, don't dismiss that.
Also, Cara Darmody back with her protest about the long delays, the dreadful delays for people looking for assessment of needs for children. It's become almost an annual protest at this stage. She was even brought in to help the Ciarán Cóirle, wasn't she, Micheál?
Yes.
Turn on the Christmas lights. And Norma Foley has been out this week talking about her new plan, but a lot of parents and the teachers' unions seem to have a lot more questions about the minister's plan than to be sure about the answers.
Yeah, because I suppose it's not really clear who is going to make these early assessments now that the minister says will allow children who need it to get the services they require, whether that's health or whether that's education, because there is a determination in government to get the therapists who are carrying out the assessments back in the field and back providing the therapies. So to do that, there seems to be a new system emerging. Again, it's unclear where people's need can be identified early. And as well as that, given that a large number of people who get an assessment are diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum, that you would have a special tailored approach for people with autism now. Again, not exactly clear how that would work, given that it mightn't be very clear at the beginning of a person going into the assessment. And the government haven't altered the fact, though, that 6 month requirement is there, that remains in the legislation.
And that was set down as what that there have been court cases on this, and that timetable has been reaffirmed by the courts, and the nature of the detail of that examination has also been affirmed by the courts.
Yes, so government have backed away from that one, despite the kind of murmurs from senior politicians for quite some time that could be a matter for legislative change. That hasn't happened. And equally, they say that people's right to get an assessment of need remains in place. But of course, there are people who say that when it comes to really accessing the services, that it isn't a luxury, it isn't overly complex to have a full assessment, that is what's needed. But until more therapists in huge, huge numbers can be found, it seems that this reform is going to be the alternative.
And that's what Cara Darmody was saying yesterday, actually. That was one of the points she was making, that the government had promised to undertake to recruit all these extra therapists and to put the people in the mm-hmm. system to start making the system work. And it hasn't happened. And she was talking about the need for that even though there was a recruitment campaign, it wasn't a visible campaign, and therefore it wasn't successful, and it needs to be done in a very visible yeah. way, and that you have to ramp up all the numbers of employees. But again, the question arises, where do you get these people? Where do you get mm-hmm. the therapists? Where do you get the teachers, the speech therapists, the psychologists?
If, you know, the whole point of this is to free up the people doing the assessments to be able to, A, do them more quickly and also provide more therapies. Where does that extra work go? Is it something that's going to end up back in the classroom and back in the school, because they're under an awful lot of pressure as well at the moment? So obviously a lot more to come on that.
I suppose then there is that other issue when you have a system that's completely clogged, and inevitably a private kind of alternative system develops alongside it, and therapists who are working in the state system often will go across then for better conditions and better pay, and finding their replacement in the HSE becomes an ongoing battle. So how that's going to be worked and solved isn't clear either.
The spun out ad, we can't talk about the week without talking about that. So this was the ad that was produced by the youth group Spun Out. It was young people sitting in a very nice chair in a very nice room, talking about giving advice really on how to talk to your folks if you're stuck in the situation that so many young adults are, of having to move back in.
I've made all my children watch it.
Do you know what, Joe? I didn't show it to mine deliberately, because if I did, I'd have been listening to the ranting for the next hour and a half.
I'm just worn out
because I'm like the old woman who lives in a shoe. I'm worn out.
Do you whip them all soundly before you send them to bed?
I don't.
The Spun Out video.
I think, didn't the minister say, you know, it didn't have the involvement of the Department of Housing, but some well-intentioned person commissioned this video by Spun Out. I guess the logic was, oh, hang on, you know, so many people are being forced to move in back home while they save for a deposit to buy their own home. Maybe we can give them some practical tips, but it's just so tone deaf. And some of the advice was just really obvious, you know, like, ask how you can help around the house, you know. You know, help out with some chores.
People banging on the bathroom door. Get out of there. Yeah.
If I can play devil's advocate here, though, if you have been living away from home for a couple of years, you know, you've got your own life. You've had a great, you know, you regulate yourself. You regulate your space. You regulate when you come and go. And then if you're suddenly back into the house with your parents, God, it must be difficult. You know, you might need to be reminded, would you?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
they all revert to childhood. Rather than giving our own opinions, I think Rory Hearn referred to it as like a Waterford Whispers sketch. Conor Sheehan said the tone was terrible, and Owen O'Brien said it was like a very bad joke. So.
And the department have taken it down off their social media.
If I had an advent calendar, Micheál, for the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party report on the Gavin presidency, will I get to see it by Christmas Eve?
I don't know. You might have to wait Christmas Day. Is that always the biggest bit of the advent?
No, it's 24 is the big one.
You'd have eaten all the chocolates maybe by the time you got to the report.
Well, apparently last night, right at the very end of that meeting, as people were moving for votes and a lot of people had left the room, Micheál Martin was asked one more time about the report. And he said, next week. And then they said the special meeting, and he said that as well. So that's vague enough. In the sense that, could it mean the end of next week? Could the special meeting be after Christmas?
He's got the council next week,
exactly.
Doesn't he, the
Unless
European
they
council?
Go to a special meeting on Tuesday, which some people are speculating on, but I'm not so sure. Maybe. And I think as things stand, it does seem like at least one legal team, of course there's legal teams for Fianna Fáil and Jim Gavin, at least one legal team still have their hands on that report and are looking through it.
Well, we'll see what Santa brings on that front. We've one more podcast to give everybody before Christmas, Joe, do we?
One more before Christmas. I will wish everybody a very warm and happy Christmas on that one.
Seven more sleeps till then. Talk to you then.